Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. And having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests as well as dynamic co-hosts as they discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we together can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, with me today is my co-host, is Art Torres. Art,
hi. Hello, everybody out there in that world.
Art is a dear friend. He's also a fellow investigator. He's been on the show before. And we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. And I said, you know what? I said, we're going to talk about the promise of wholeness. And why don't you come on and join me in speaking with this guest, and I was glad he could make it.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. Looking so forward to this. It's going to be great.
All right. Now, many of you are used to hearing Gabriella's voice at this time, or at least wanting to know, where in the world is Gabriella? Well, I spoke to her recently, and she is in an area. There are still some of these that exist.
We don't know exactly where she's at, do we?
Well, that's right. We don't know exactly where she's at because she's in an area that doesn't have any form of cell phone connection or any GPS or anything, which actually is probably a treat. Yeah. But I can still tell you that she is still out there. She is traveling the world, and it is part of the Dare to Be Kind movement, and you can all become a part of it. One of the ways is you can go to the Dare to Be Kind Movement Facebook page where you'll meet other people and you'll be able to share some of your experiences. So if you get the opportunity within a 2-mile radius to do something kind for someone and let them then pay it forward, it's a great way for all of us to make a positive difference in the world. I'm sure Gabriella will be with us next week and she'll be able to tell us not only where she's at, but what her latest adventure is. So with that, I want to talk a little bit about our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, which is The Promise of Wholeness, Cultivating Inner Peace, Mindfulness, and Love in What is Now a Divided World. And I think this is incredibly topical considering where we're at, and it's not even just our society, it's the whole world.
Yeah, I think it's the climate of the whole world.
Exactly.
Yeah, great title, by the way.
Yes. And again, I was thankful. I'm thankful to Jan, our producer, and for those people that don't know, I couldn't do this without her. Okay, she is the one that is. She is booking the guests. She is helping make all of this work as so smoothly that I'm just incredibly grateful for that.
Absolutely.
So a little bit about our guest. His name is Eric Erke, and he is a psychiatric social worker whose private practice has spanned more than 40 years. He's trained in Western and Eastern applied philosophy, and he has served as faculty for an integrative healing school. His original teachings merge immortal principles, mind-body wisdom, and modern psychology into practical strategies that lead to lasting peace and wholeness. And with that, Eric, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you here. And I just want you to know, just to really acknowledge yourself and many of the guests that we have, if anybody has ever taken the time to even think about writing a book, it is not something that is very easy. You know, it is something that takes up a great deal of your time, and it also takes up, I mean, it is, it has to become a passion. If it's going to be good, as this one is, it really needs to be a passion. And so let's start with that, Eric. So what was the passion that drove you to decide that you were going to write a book of with this much information?
I, as a young age, stuttered really badly, and I had a lot of stuff going on. I saw bullies, you know, firsthand, and I remember thinking, you know, why do people treat people this way? Why are they angry? Why people scream so much? And it was just something that every day of my life, actually since I went to kindergarten, I started thinking about. And then I got my degree, you know, there was alcoholism in our family, so I saw some of that stuff. So, you know, what a lot of psychotherapists do and people in the healing profession do is you kind of want to figure out, you know, where you came from, and then hopefully you can pass on whatever you learned out to other people. So that thirst to find what really works, and to me, that's why I never stopped with Western or Eastern thought. Whatever I could explore that really worked, and then I could try it out with people and then see good results, then I got really interested.
Now, tell the audience a little bit about your background, because it, you know, as you just mentioned, as far as you're trained in Western and Eastern medicine, share a little bit about your background and how somebody has the ability to be able to learn both, because I think that's something that's incredibly unique and something that we need a lot more of here, where we see so much of just the Western side of that equation.
Yeah, you know, I went to a Catholic school, you know, where we're taught Greek and Latin, you know, when I was younger. And, you know, in terms of the Eastern, you know, I basically was self-taught. I just couldn't, that there was about 20 years, that's all I would do is read it. I would listen to it. I remember I took the Tao Te Ching, and for 4 years, I listened to every single part of it until I could understand it. Because from my point of view, a lot of the Eastern philosophy, it was like they talked out of both sides of their mouth. And I knew that it was something profound, and then I would just do it until I could understand it. And then it became like the sky opening up, and then I could start to see, you know, how that all worked. And then I discovered Plotinus, which is in my book, which is a Greek philosopher that was actually talking a lot and evolving a lot of the Greek philosophy in a very similar track as the Eastern guys. And then, unfortunately, when the Constantine basically combined the Eastern and Western Roman Empire and converted into Catholicism, the once he made that decision, he basically exiled every Greek philosopher, raised every Greek philosophy teaching center in the world. And so that's why we don't actually hear a lot about the advancement, you know, right after that. But I was saying that even back then, that there was alignment in terms of, you know, what in wisdom, because every philosopher at the core is finding some universal truth that will stand the test of time.
Wow, that's very interesting. Holy smokes. That's an earful there of so much experience. So you took what, 20, was it like, I guess your whole life, right? Trying to understand why things happen the way they do?
Yes, I would say so. And then, you know, I got interested in a lot of the mind, body work, because I began to see, you know, that some of that work was actually 10 times faster than the hypnosis techniques that I was, you know, beginning to understand and working with my clients. And so there's kind of what I see is when you can, you know, align good philosophy, good psychology, and good spiritual concepts, they all have to be saying the same thing, because if there's, you know, some sort of ultimate truth of some kind, that's what I've seen.
Now, you just mentioned hypnosis, and why don't you explain a little bit about not only, you know, how it plays such an important role in the book, but, you know, what does this have to do with unity, duality, and illusion?
Okay. Hypnosis is the Greek word for oneness, and most of the churches, religions, New Age thinking, you know, basically is they always say that we are one. And for most people that see, just look at our politics, you know, you think, how are we all one with this stuff, you know? And so then try to take a look at what is the essence of what that means. And so from my point of view, the philosophers have been saying this forever. And the challenge for us, you know, is that there's basically love and there's illusion. And, you know, we can call it evil, you know, different people call it different things. You know, in my book, I call love and illusion. And that the purpose of illusion, basically, you know, if you can embrace the concept that we have some part of us lives beyond this life, that we come from some place that is full of love. And then we come here and we have this experiment on this planet where there's love and there's something other than love. So in essence, you know, the other than love is what we can call darkness, we can call evil, we can talk whatever. But what I've seen clinically, and again, you know, the guy's been saying this, but it was to me seeing it for my own self, I guess, is that the core of all behavior, if you really boil it down to the essence of it, is there's a positive intention. And then sometimes we come up with a plan that's really ill-advised and it turns out to be painful and whatever. And so we have a teacher of wisdom or pain. And unfortunately, most of us choose pain. And so people can call that darkness or evil. But basically, pain and what we would consider darkness is there just to teach us that we miss the mark. It's like when we're driving our car and we kind of, you know, get off the road and we hit the gravel, that the gravel's there just to remind us to go back onto the road. And so that's how I see with darkness and the darkness and light, if that makes sense.
Yeah, is that where you're kind of talking about the enlightenment being the spirit of our divinity? I mean, those kind of go hand in hand, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think the one core concept that, you know, I've seen, and I have in my book too, that every spiritual master, it doesn't matter whether they're Eastern or Western, you know, that came here, they basically are teaching us how can we embody in physical form our divine nature. And then there's a thousand different ways to do it. But then in essence, what we're trying to do is how can we physically do it being in this crazy human being that we are?
Yeah, no doubt, right?
Yeah. You know, and you were just mentioning a little bit in regards to sort of like the darkness and stuff. And I know that you write in fact, it's in the book as well, you know, that you always wondered why people are cruel. Talk a little bit about your own experience with bullying, because I know you addressed that a little in the book.
Okay, thank you. You know, I was taught all the wrong things, you know, at first. You know, I basically was taught to, you know, hold my breath and kind of wait till I form the words. And, you know, and I was raised in Catholicism, and I tried to do my Jesus approach, was to turn the other cheek. Meanwhile, I'm furious inside. But I would pray for them. I would do all those different things. And at some point, you know, that didn't work. And I go to my dad, who's really a man's man, and he teaches me how to punch, you know. So then I'm like 8 or 9 years old, and I walk to school the next day, and you know, kid makes fun of me, and I, you know, punch him, and he shuts up, and I'm thinking, okay, this is the good plan, you know. And then the next kid just kills me, and I remember really thinking and praying, you know, like I need another plan. So what I learned, and I've been teaching this to kids and adults, whoever have been bullied, and I think a lot of times when people have unconscious anger, the same thing happens. And so what happens with a bully, they have unconscious anger. When they witness someone be in pain, they actually get relief. So what bullies are looking for is someone to discharge their anger in some way, so that if so my emotions, I began to recognize, were food to the vampires. I thought of them as vampires back then. And that if I could be calm and not react and try the best I could to not be angry inside, because even if you're boiling on the inside, they still win, actually. And so then if you can stay in that peaceful state, they get bored with you really quickly, actually. And I can't tell how many kids that have acne and hair lips and all sorts of things, you know, come back to me and just say, oh my God, it works, you know. And go ahead and try it, because if you can stay calm, they get bored with you, because the payoff is the reaction, the emotional reaction that you give them, if that makes sense.
Sure. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I, as you're talking, I'm just, you know, I was thinking as myself when I was young. I mean, I was never a bully, but I, you know, not to say this is right, but I used to learn that one way to stop a bully is just to give him a good punch in the nose. I'm not saying people to do that. I'm just saying. Anyways, you know, you also talk about imagination to actualization in the instant world. Talk more about that, because that seems kind of like the combo of the things that you're doing between all the readings you've had, both from the Western and Eastern. I mean, you seem like that guy that would be like, you know, just bringing everybody together. I mean, am I right when I say that?
I'm sorry. Could you state the sentence, the question again?
I'm sorry. The question was, I apologize. Yeah, the question was actualization in this instant world. Talk about that. I mean, it seems like you've seen so much. I mean, as a child and as an adult and all your travelings, how does that just play together?
What you're saying?
Okay, well, actually, we just had a bit of a sunspot or something that took out a few words, but so I think it was, you know, when you're talking about going from imagination to actualization, and to do this in an instantaneous world,
share
a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, basically what I'm saying is what you're saying from the part of, like, even the bullying part, where you just control yourself and you don't partake in the action. Is that basically what you're saying? Well, another radio.
You actually asked a more expansive question. Let me do the expansive part first. I think one way that we can create whatever we want to create, a good reaction or to create a better outcome in our life, to me, there's a three-legged stool. And on one leg is our behavior, that we have our behaviors aligned to what we want or what our goal is. Our second is our emotions, that we can have our emotions that we really want what we want, but there's a passion behind what we want. And then our intellect is the third. And what the intellect basically means is, do I have every part of my brain that says this is okay? Because if I've got unconscious parts to say it's not okay, well, then that's going to blow things up then too. And so if I can use that with a bullying, basically, the ability to have some degree of control of your emotions, but also your behavior. So you aren't giving facial cues or whatever, and you can kind of, in essence, have a locus of control inside you that it doesn't really matter what they do. And when you can do it with your behavior and your mind and your body and your emotions can be in that alignment, whether or not it's a bully or whether or not you're trying to interview for a brand new job and convince them that you're a good employee, it'd be the same thing.
So So basically, you're saying you just master yourself, your personal emotion, and how how you present yourself. Which, I mean, for some people, it takes a lifetime, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
Right, and yet, you know, part of the challenge then is to at least know what you need to do, because part of whatever you consciously think, you know, the first thing, you know, to be able to create something, you have to dream it. You have to have something that you really want to. So when your emotions are really powerfully in that direction, well, then you have part of that leg in place. And then how the spiritual works is that if you are trying to do something that's good, you know, it's good for yourself, it's good for other people, then you can start to tap into what your soul's interested in or the spiritual world is interested in. Because whenever you have interest to help others, to help in some positive way, then there is spiritual energy that can come in to support your plan. And then that's where 2 + 2 can equal 5.
You know, in one of the areas that I think that we need to speak a lot more about, which is love, and in your book, you talk about a continuum from love to illusion. And when I read that, and I was thinking kind of the opposite, and I was thinking, isn't there a continuum from illusion to love? So share with us why you see it as from love to illusion.
Well, actually, I think in my thinking that the continuum means it goes both ways, actually. And so the challenge is that the mistake, you know, for example, the Eastern guys, they basically see it as a continuum, and in the West, because of the Greeks' language, they saw it as good and evil, basically. And so the challenge for a lot of us raised here is to be able to start to see it not in black and white terms, but that it goes both ways. And so I can fall into an illusion, but then I can just sort of, once I realize I'm in an illusion or that I did something stupid and I'm beating myself up for it, I can just learn to stop it and then bring love to that place and then find a loving, positive way to convince myself to do a new behavior. And all the psychological research shows that self-criticism, trying to punish yourself, you know, to do stronger behaviors, it doesn't work. You know, it doesn't work in every single thing. And yet, most of us are taught, you know, that, you know, well, you did something wrong, you need to be punished, as opposed to all we really need to learn is, if we've made a mistake, you know, what is it that I need to do different, and then make a plan to, you know, follow through with that new plan.
Wow, that's really amazing that you're even saying that, because I know life, I mean, me, myself, you know, I have 7 children, thank God they're all doing well, but you know, having all their different lives and spirits and ways, I mean, trying to adjust to them, it's right down with what you're saying. You know, I was reading in your book also, you were talking about the parallels of quantum theory and spirituality. And I guess it all goes kind of like hand in hand.
Yeah, I got thrilled, you know, there's a movie out years ago, What the Bleep Do We Know? But basically there's many, many different ways where the people that are deep in their spiritual world has been thrilled as the quantum theory information is beginning to get more mainstream, because in essence it's saying that we're all entangled and that once there's a relationship between two atoms that it kind of lasts for a long time. And the essence of quantum, you know, theory, if I can just give a quick little turnaround.
Yeah, please do.
Is that physicists were watching electrons shoot through these slats, and then one philosopher would say, well, I think it's going to do this. It'll be like a shotgun blast on the opposite side. Another physicist thought, well, no, I think it may be a wave function. And whatever the physicist was thinking is what the electrons were doing.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's what's so amazing.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Wow. Yeah.
So everything you've ever read about, you know, how you think, you create your reality, what goes around, there's physics that has been around forever that we just didn't know about it that's actually supporting them.
You know, Eric, you spoke just a little bit when you talked about self-punishment and how we've sort of gotten into this mode of, you know, kind of beating ourselves up over things. Talk a little bit more about how somebody that knows that they're doing that, how can they get away with, you know, get away from that that mindset? What are some tangible things that they can do, be it, you know, certain types of meditation or whatever? So for the listener that's out there that's going, God, I do that all the time. How can I get away from that? Give them some tips.
Oh, okay, well, you know, there's the DARE technique, which is just say no, which, you know, has a very limited shelf life. Let me explain a little basic stuff that it helps explain why it's so difficult. When I did the research for the brain in my chapter 7, one of the interesting things that I learned, what they're finding out, is when there's trauma, that it gets locked into your right hemisphere. And so when you read a book or you talk, it's your left hemisphere. So in essence, if you've been traumatized by someone physically, you know, abusing you, or that, you know, you have a strict religious background that believes that God can send you to hell, because in essence, you know, if the God of your faith can basically say that I can punish you and that's actually my right, and then, well, then it's really easy to think, well, then I can punish my partner, I can punish my friends and my kids and myself, you know, that's part of the divine plan. And so some of these can get anchored in very deeply. And there's a concept in my book that I find profound. I call it a primary love template, because when I watched kids really young, they're full of love, and whatever their parents do, good and bad, they hardwire that into their system, and then they treat themselves the same way. So in talk therapy, just yelling at your parents that they did crazy stuff doesn't actually solve that, because when I really see people heal that, it's actually they find that there's a part of them that actually believes that it's a loving act to do these things. It's usually locked in your right hemisphere, which is why you have to do something experiential to stop some of these chronic problems. So one technique can be that you can have your wise part witness the punitive part of you. I think of them as voices inside your head. You know, one says, well, I shouldn't criticize myself. And then another voice is just doing it, you know. And then as soon as you catch yourself to try to put on an extinction cycle, just to think of something else, divert your attention or whatever. And there's that can be effective for some people. Other people oftentimes, what I find is there's some buried in trauma that there's a bunch of techniques, and many therapists and myself know a bunch of them, but it's trying to breathe into that spot where the original belief system is. And because in essence, what ends up happening, like with a little kid, is if they've been punished a lot by the parents, you know, that the kid will believe that maybe I'm evil. Maybe there's some part of me that is flawed. And that gets buried in there, and they can go through 20 years of you know, life and know that it's wrong, and yet at some point that's where they'll go, you know, at some point, which is why sometimes you have to do these experiential techniques, which would be meditation, trying to breathe in, you know. We wouldn't have time to get into all the techniques I teach. But it's some process. For example, EMDR is a very brilliant technique that helps people find that. But if you put your intention to focus in on that spark, sometimes you can actually hear the words inside, you know, that somebody had said to you, and you can begin to recognize, you know, from your witnessing state, the illusion that got buried in that red hemisphere, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. And, you know, in all that you're saying, I was thinking about, you know, like you said, children. I mean, you know, it's said that, you know, we teach them anger and hate. But I guess some of that is, I guess, what, like DNA bound, right? I mean, some people are very angry, some people are not so angry. But I mean, do you think that those two go together? I mean, you know, we teach hate,
we teach all that.
I mean, is that? Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
No, fine. You made it a good question. There's been a debate forever. You know, is it nature versus
nurture?
Nurture. You know, are you born that way, or are you developed it on your own? And from my point of view, it doesn't make any difference, because in essence, once it's there, the only thing you can do is try to heal that. I worked at psychiatric hospitals. I worked with kids with brain damage from abuse. And no matter what the reason why the kid had the problem, the only thing we could do with him is, what are you going to do now with this thing, you know? So we would teach them, you know, this is what you do with this situation, this is what you can do with that. So the hope is that you have someone that actually wants to self-reflect, who wants to be able to understand what's going on, can have an observing part of them, can say, wow, that behavior isn't cool, I don't want that. And so if there is an organic sort of component, which does happen, you know, people are born with bipolar, or they're schizophrenic, or, you know, there's certain people that the families seem to be all depressed, you know, it just means that you've got to have a heavier load, but yet we can overcome that. I believe we can all overcome most of the things that do occur. If we developed a bad habit for whatever reason, you know, people that are bullies, or they're kind of got an anger problem. I worked with kids in residential treatment centers, and they were all their angry adolescents. And what I learned underneath all that anger was usually fear. And if we could find out the deeper emotional material, and all healing happens with sympathetic resonance, when you can bring not only your own heart, but you can, someone else's heart can kind of hold your heart while you go through that, you can release whatever illusion. And that's the continuum about the love and illusion, that those are illusions that we're here to master.
I love that. We are talking with Eric Erke. We are talking about his new book, The Promise of Wholeness, Cultivating Inner Peace, Mindfulness, and Love in a Divided World. So if the divided world is bothering you right now, we're going to take a break. In the meantime, take a couple of deep breaths Inhale, exhale.
I love that.
Relax. Add a couple of ohms if it makes you feel better. But you're listening to Answers for the Family, and we'll be right back.
Be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. With me is Art Torres. We're talking with Eric Erkey, and we're talking about the promise of wholeness and just how perfectly timed this book is, because it's about cultivating inner peace, mindfulness, and love in a divided world. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing right now. So in fact, while we were at break, and Art and I were talking a little bit about this, you know, that, you know, first of all, it's great to have Eric on here.
Sure is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But this is also something that, you know, many people are living this, you know, so, you know, I'm grateful to have Eric on to be able to talk about 40 years of looking at this and being able to give really positive ways in which people can make the changes in their life, and how it will, it'll take you from one point to the other. Because as soon as you start getting inner peace, all of a sudden everything else changes in your life, including your mindfulness. All of a sudden you're seeing things differently. You're not buying into this whole divided thing. You're seeing things more from love, from kindness.
Now, Eric, I've got a question for you. I mean, right now you're hearing about, you know, our president, you know, doing the division in the whole world. I mean, is that really at the universal level?
For me, Trump represents a process that's been happening for some time. I think he's the pinprick head of it now. Now, yet there's other people around the world that are, you know, copying some of that stuff. I think that, you know, there's so many things that are challenging around how to be whole while we see the horrible things that we see with immigration. We see, you know, things that we thought our country stood for isn't really what we're seeing right now. And there's multiple things that are there to challenge. I remember when I was trying to write about being incorruptible in one of the chapters, and part of what I liked about Viktor Frankl and some of his work when he was a victim of the Holocaust in World War II, that his point of view was that basically you don't really know why these things happen, and he gave up even trying to figure it out. He says the only thing you have control over is what you do about them. What is your response to those things? So the challenge is that for people that are super sensitive, that whatever you judge, you tend to vibrate at the frequency of that which you judge, which means it lowers your frequency, that whatever you think that you don't like and you're just steaming with anger, it's just going to lower your frustration point and get you stressed out. Obviously, people can send, you know, prayer work to send light there. And at the same point, if you feel that you need to do something to stand up for a different point of view, the challenge is how to hold and be grounded, you know, as you either send money or you try to make a statement of some kind. And the challenge is to not get into a position of opposition and at the same level that you do. So standing in for what you love and what you hold is actually the challenge. How easy is that to do? It's extremely hard. In fact, it's as hard now as I'm 68 years old, and I marched against the war in Vietnam. You know, and I went to school right when Kent State happened. You know, just a few miles down the road, and I'm watching friends of mine getting shot with wooden bullets. And you know, it's so difficult to hold love when you're seeing such pain around the world. And yet, that is our job, to be able to send light and to hold their place. I think there's another piece that I have in chapter 8 about people that are really energy sensitive people, and I could talk about that at a different time, but some people that are extremely affected by this, and they find themselves going into depressions or whatever, that they really need to not watch this stuff and focus on these divisions as much.
You know, Eric, you just mentioned, actually both of you mentioned about some of the divisiveness that we're dealing with right now, but you also mentioned to sort of stand up for your passion, and I completely agree. But at the same time, it's the way in which we stand up for it that I think is becoming a problem. I know that I was at a conference recently, and I had a conversation with someone, and we disagreed on a variety of things, and it was an incredibly enjoyable experience because we did this, and this is someone, and I'm also in my 60s like yourself, as was the gentleman I was speaking with, and it was an incredibly civil conversation that we could disagree. And so the one person would talk about what they were thinking or what their passion was. The other one came back with, that's an interesting approach, but have you thought of it looking at this way? Or have you thought of it looking at that way? And that, to me, is healthy. I think what we have out there now is something that is incredibly, incredibly unhealthy, which is we have two different groups that are telling people not to listen to anything that the other side says, but to demonize them, or to stick your ears in your finger and make noises so that you don't hear anything they say, and to essentially tell them if they don't agree with you, there's something wrong with them. And that's where I think that the problem, and it isn't just with one side, it's literally both sides. And I've spoken to people and on the subject of saying, anybody that tells you to demonize, anybody that tells you to hate or to be that divisive, even if it's the people that you believe that they have the right idea, even if they have the right idea, telling you to demonize or to hate is what's wrong with it. Now, would you agree that, I mean, this is kind of part of the problem, and what would be some of the ways you would think that we can move away from that?
Well, first off, Alan, I think you make a wonderful point, and bless you and the people that can have that civil conversation. I love that as well, too, because then you have an exchange of ideas with two heart-centered people, and you know, which is fine, and debate is a great, great, great thing. I think that the pull to be in a tribe is extremely seductive. It's been a ploy of despots and tyrants since the beginning of time. And I watch, you know, some of the World War II, you know, techniques, you know, and I see, you know, similar ones now. I think that the challenge for each person is that their internal compass needs to be solid. I think the challenge, you know, which again, what a lot of the Eastern, you know, people are trying to teach us to learn how to meditate, have our own relationship, you know, with the transcendent of some kind, where we basically have some voice inside that can look over the trees and see the forest. You know, I think many people just are bumping against trees and think this is the only thing that's in front of them. And so, you know, the challenge, you know, for example, what I think, this is my own personal one, that when I get really fed up with this stuff, I start thinking about, you know, some of the, you know, darkness that it seems to be getting stronger right now, that in essence is like a slingshot, you know, that we can maybe as a collective be going into some really dark places, and that at some point we as a collective will say enough. We just don't want this stuff. And that somehow we can, you know, rise up as a group and say, this, we don't want this. We want something else, you know. And so when I get in my more hopeless state, I start envisioning that we as a group, I mean, the challenge that I see is we're a primitive species. You know, I can talk all day about being whole and all these brilliant, sages, and you can
how wonderful we are.
and I've, you know, had a meditation practice for decades and decades. I can feel all that oneness, and then go off and see someone, really harming other people, you know. And the challenge, you know, when one of my teachers spoke, which is, you know, you have all those guys and in India, and they can live in a cave and do all of this stuff, but you know, we have to live in this real world where there's some crazy ass stuff that you're gonna do in the next minute. What are you gonna do with that, you know?
Sure.
And so we all are having to face with judgments, looking things at the news, and that ability to say, this is all I can stomach. I know a bunch of my clients, you know, just won't watch the new news. Some people watch it and then have like I teach them about having a barometer that somehow says, okay, this is too much, and now I have to go into this other world, you know, where it's peaceful. And so each person has to make that choice. But the challenge to go into hatred, to go into huge judgment, you know, I've learned this over and over and over. And there's 1,000 phrases throughout time. What goes around comes around. What you reap, what you sow. Love begets love. Hatred begets. Those are really true. The reason why we've seen them in all of our spiritual explorations is because they're true. So we can't have people that are pushing hatred that we go there with them.
Sure. So, I also see here when I looked at your book here, something about somatic empathy in that theory. Is that basically what you're talking about now? I mean, it sounds like it.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so I'll just give a quick little summary.
Sure.
Some people, what?
Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Some people are more sensitive than the average duck. There's like 1 out of 5 people I think are extremely sensitive, that they can walk into a room, no one's speaking, but they just know what's going on, and they can just feel their stomach turn and whatever.
That sounds like my ex-wife. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry?
Sounds like my ex-wife. Keep going. I'm so sorry.
well, right. And they're usually being taught that they're more sensitive and yakety yak. And so I've learned about this because my kid was this way. I was this way. Being a guy, it was actually worse because I actually thought, God, I'm so emotional. I must be really screwed up because guys should just, you know, buck it up and not feel these things. And yet I'm feeling everything. And so I've learned that through visualization and ways that you can, you know, like if you take a shower or you visualize a shower, you can clear your field. And so what ends up happening is when we kind of scan our environment, and everybody has that ability, these intuitive abilities, but as you scan it, you actually Velcro other people's emotions into your field. And if you're around a bunch of darkness, and when once it goes into your physical being, it'll be processed as if it's your own. And so some of my clients over the years that would come in, and they had fibromyalgia, there'd be, you know, major depressions. And then I pick up how sensitive they have. They've got these huge hearts. They're extremely loving, wonderful people. And yet they're getting, you know, inundated with these things and not knowing what they're doing. That. So there's a series of techniques in Chapter 8 about how to clear your field. There's many websites about this now. This is really a popular thing. There's many books about it now, too. But when I started learning it 25 years ago, there wasn't hardly anything about it. And so I've had clients actually, you know, not have fibromyalgia symptoms, that people get off from their meds, because that was going on. And as they could learn to assess these emotions and then learn how to clear their field, or when to, you know, create a shield or a pillar of light to kind of have it all kind of flush, you know, into the ground, their mental health took a huge positive hit.
You know, not to get off center, but, you know, I think as you're talking, and I think about alcoholism, and I've had some experience with that lately, not with me, but with people. Do you think through all these that you talk in the book, I mean, can that help someone that's an alcoholic that's fighting and struggling to stay sober?
I think so. You know, my dad had a drinking problem, so I know some of this firsthand besides, you know, seeing people. You know, a lot of people with addiction, and I just don't think of it as alcoholism. I just, there's food addictions, there's drug addictions, there's workaholism. The core of all addictions is that there's some emotions that are coming my way, and I don't want them. And whatever I do to blunt those emotions is my addiction. It can become an addiction. Whether or not we drink or whether or not we just avoid them, typically whenever I've treated people with addictions, that's the core difficulty, that they have to go face the emotions. That's why there's AA and NA programs where you're trying to connect to people so they talk about those emotions. So what can happen is some of these really sensitive people were hit with these emotions, and then taking, you know, getting drunk was a lot easier than feeling them. So a number of my clients, and I don't want to say all of them, but, you know, like I said, one out of five, but there can be some people that are actually extremely emotionally sensitive, that if they learn some of these techniques, if that's one of the things that's going on, they'll be easier for them than to handle their emotions, because they'll be processing their own emotions rather than theirs and everyone else, you know, in the room.
Yeah, I think your book would be some really good reading for some people that are battling, whether it's alcoholism or drugism or whatever it is. I think your book would do them some real good.
Oh, well, thanks.
Now, Eric, we have a listener question, and I want to take this time to thank the listeners that do take the time, many of which we get some that are teachers or people that work during the day. They send these to us either through instant message or they email. Please keep them coming in. What we do is we make sure that they get answered on the air, and then many people tell us that they subscribe to us through iTunes or Stitcher or something similar to that. They listen later to get their answer, and so again, we thank you for that. This one reads, I read the summary where you state in your book that critical exercises for infantile, childish, and adolescent stress responses, about adolescent stress responses. I think that's brilliant. I would really like to order your book if it relates to what I'm experiencing with some friends who are entirely too overreactive and drama-driven over every little thing. The excuse they give for their stage-worthy performances is their enhanced spiritual sensitivity and or great depth of spiritual emotion. Can you comment to this? And this is from William in Minnesota.
What a great question. Wow.
What a great question. I'm just thrilled to attempt to answer it. Chapter 7, I talk about one thing I watched, and this is an important thing that I'd love to pass on. I invite everyone not to look at someone's chronological age, but only look at them on their emotional age. Because there can be 70-year-old people that are acting like infants. We kind of see that on the news at times. And they can act like children and adolescents. So in my book, I describe each of those states, because, you know, briefly, like an infant, they can only, just like a real infant, they can only think of themselves. They can't think of another person. And so when someone is totally narcissistic, only focusing on their own issue, that they're psychologically an infant. The same intervention you would do with an actual infant is you try to take care of their needs to calm them down. That's actually the best strategy when someone is actually acting like an infant. Moving on to a child doesn't understand their emotions. Abstract thinking doesn't kick in to age 13 to 15, so they can't really talk about emotions. So what kids will do is they'll basically act out their emotions behaviorally. You know, like if they're nervous, they'll like stamping their feet and you ask them, you know, if anything's wrong, they'll say nothing. But you look at their behavior and they're like a nervous wreck. And so the same intervention that you do with a kid, you know, is to then set boundaries and set, you know, firm boundaries and with love, you know, say, well, we're not going to be doing that now. You can't have your dessert before supper, whatever. But you would temper those words exactly an adult. My mom passed away, but she would fall into that state sometimes in her old age at the nursing home. And I'd say, you know, Mom, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to be doing this. And she would just say, okay, you know, because I would do it with love. But you can really find that if you hit the right emotional stage, these interventions really do work. At the lesson stage, their core issue is autonomy. They look at the whole world about how this is going to affect their sense of power, who's taking away or not. And so if you ask someone who's an active adolescent to do something, their first instinct is to say no, because if I say yes, then you've taken away my power. So adolescents will usually resist everything. And their stage of life is they're learning how to become a healthy adult, but they learn by saying no to everything. So the healthy adult actually has to learn how to say yes. What do I love and say yes to those things? So the intervention with an adolescent is you basically, I always make them talk and have them explain why they're thinking what they do. And I think of it as short-term and long-term thinking. Because the adolescent usually is short-term thinking and they don't see the long-term consequences of what they're doing. And then when you can lay out to them the long-term consequences and how that will not serve their autonomy interests, well, then you can get cooperation with them more easily. And so the healthy adult is really what the whole book is about knowing what you love, having your three stools, your intellect, your behavior, your emotions, you know, in a line, you know, in complete alignment when you're doing things for the benefit of everyone around you, then your spiritual access, you know, starts to happen. Then you can learn what you want to create in the world. And then you say yes to the world, if that all makes sense.
Well, it does make sense. And to drive that point home, Art's hungry, and I'm afraid he's going to start stamping his feet any moment now. We've run out of time.
Okay.
Eric, I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, very, very nice to listen to you, man. Great stuff. Wow.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. And it's a pleasure to be talking with each of you as well. Thank you.
Well, and for everybody out there, and I assume, Eric, you can get the book at anywhere. You can get it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, all the places where you can get books, correct?
Correct.
Yes, that's wonderful. So again, thank you for coming on. Please keep us posted. In fact,
I'd like to have him on again. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more to be talked about.
Exactly, and that's what I was going to say. And especially if you have a follow-up coming up to this, let us know. We would love to have you back on and pick up where we left off.
Great. And I also write things, and I have a website, ericurkey.com, if they want to read some stuff that I'm currently working on right now.
Okay. So, and again, for those of you, that's Eric Urkey, but that's spelled ERECEHRKE.com. If there's for those of you that are driving, we'll have all of that on the website, the answersforthefamily.com website. So, I realize that the spelling might be an issue there. So go to the website. We'll have it correct on there, and you can check out everything.
Great.
All right. Now for everybody.
And I would love to hang out with you guys as well again.
Oh, and yeah, in fact, I was going to say, if you get out to Southern California, let us know.
Okay, well, thanks a lot then.
All right. Take care. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're joined by Zanet Paillette to discuss her best-selling book, Living an Orgasmic Life. And please visit our archives.
Did you say orgasmic?
I did say orgasmic.
I love that.
Yes. Yeah. See, it's just the way in which you name it that just we want to give you just enough to make sure that you're listening. So if you want to live an orgasmic life, be listening next week. Please, if you get a chance, go to our website at answersforthefamily.com. Listen to some of the past interviews. You can do the same on iTunes or Stitcher. If you like what you hear, leave a comment. You know, share something with us. One is it's going to make other people find out more about what you think. It'll help people know either to go to a particular show or not. If you have some suggestions on how we can make it better, let us know that too. If you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by that page as well. Check out our last post. If you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word.
And if you like me, let me know.
There you go. And we'll have special messages going directly to Art.
Thank you.
For everybody, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Peace.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. right here on LA Talk Radio.